and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta here, Dana Osband. Our daf of the day, Masachet Bav Metzia, daf Ayin Aleph, page 71. As promised, our daf here is going through some of the agadata, some of the, I don't know, reflections or ethics or thinking behind, you know, what happens when somebody charges interest, lends with interest. This already began on the previous daf. The discussion by the sages about what does it say about a person if they're going to do this prohibited thing. Now I'm going to start from the very top of Amud Aleph. Rav Ina Amar, Hacha b'talmidei chachamim askinan. So Rav Ina says, in the Mishnah, we were talking about Torah scholars. Now, why is it relevant that they be talking about Torah scholars? Because the given here is, and it's fascinating, is that Torah scholars apparently were allowed to lend money to a non-Jew with interest. Now, that shouldn't actually be surprising. That's not the fascinating part, because they're all, I mean, it seems like everybody was allowed to lend money to a non-Jew with interest. But Ravina's comment here is to say that the Mishnah doesn't go that far. The Mishnah is specifically narrowing that case to Torah scholars. When they lend money to non-Jews, they can charge interest. Of course, the question is why. Tama mai gazora banan, shema yilmod mimasav. So the Gemara explains that the sages decreed that other people should not be lending money to non-Jews with interest, not because of a Torah prohibition, but because lest they come to learn from the actions or the behaviors of the non-Jews, meaning having that kind of ongoing interaction with the non-Jew was considered potentially a matter of influence, so on. But because the guy we're talking about in question is a Torah scholar, meaning the lender to the non-Jew with interest, we're not worried that he's going to be swayed by the non-Jew's actions. Now, I think that's a very beautiful sentiment. I think that it kind of misses the mark on a few points. One, it being that not every non-Torah scholar is going to be swayed. And being a Torah scholar is not necessarily that a guarantee against the influence that they're presenting it to be. Okay, meaning we understand that what they're really trying to do here is understand the Mishnah to say, when is it that you would lend to non-Jews with interest, given the assumption that maybe that's not a good idea either. Fine. The Gemara goes on. There are those who taught that this was Rav Huna, and he said it in connection to what Rav Yosef taught, the Tani Rav Yosef, im kesef tilve et ami, et ani im, et ani imach, ami v'nochri ami kodem. So the verse in Shemot, in Exodus chapter 22, says that if you lend money to any of my people meaning Jewish people, according to the Torah, then even to the poor people who is with you, meaning you could lend money to the poor person, don't charge interest. And we understand that then to be like a limiting factor here in for the lender. And the Gemara says, ami v'nachri, ami kodem. If you have a Jew and a non-Jew who come to borrow money from you, ami, meaning my people, meaning God's people, meaning the Jewish people, take precedence. You should lend to that person first. What about ani? Ani v'ashir. If you have a poor person comes to borrow from you and a rich person comes to borrow from you, ani kodem. The fact that it mentions a poor person in the verse means that we're going to give precedence to the poor person's need to borrow. This is a widespread principle. The poor of your, like your poor and the poor of your city, your poor come first. The idea that we have these like narrow circles of the spheres of the people with whom we interact. And then we have larger spheres, right? So let's say we talk about the individual, and then we've got that person's family and that person's, I don't know what, block, you know, or apartment building. And then we're going to extend that to town and to community at large, to country, to nation, and so on. So the Gemara says straight up You focus on the people who are local to you first. Your poor people take precedence. And then, we're talking about the poor people of your city, or the poor people of a different city, then the people of your city take precedence, not because they're more special in their poverty, right? Somebody who's from the other city will prioritize those poor people. Again, it's a matter of focusing, I guess, on these, you know, concentric circles of who is the closest to you. And even we begin with geography, although it's not only geography, it's also kind of like a sense of relationship. Amar Mar, Ami Benachri, Ami Kodem. What Mar says that when you have one of my people, Ami, and a non-Jew, and they come to you for the loan, you're going to say the Jew gets, you know, is going to take precedence. Pshita, isn't that an obvious case? Amar of Nachman, Amar Lihuna. Lo nitzcha dafilu nachri b'ribit b'Israel b'chinam. Rav Nachman says that Rav Huna said to Rav Nachman that you have to teach this, that you start with lending to the Jew, because otherwise a person might say, well, I could lend to the non-Jew with interest, or I could lend to the Jew for free, which is going to be more appealing because he wants to make that money off of the loan. And the answer is no, too bad for you. You have to lend first to the Jews amongst you. Tanya, I'm Rav Yosef. We learned in a break that Rav Yosef said as follows: Bo ure sabiyot einehem shel malvei bribit. Come and see the blindness in the eyes of the people who lend with money. Lend money with interest. Adam kore lechaveru rasha, yored imo lechayav. If a person calls a person wicked in public, right? And now he's going to be insulted, and he's going to be all upset and harassed and everything, right? Adam kore lechaveru rasha, yored imo lechayav. He's going to come down on him, you know, in all aspects of his life. So what they do is, the person who lent with interest will bring forward witnesses, and a scribe, that's a lavlar, and a pen, that's a kolmus, like a quill, and they write out a document, and they're going to sign it, that says, Ploni ze kafar be'elokei Yisrael. Thus and such a person denied the existence of the God of Israel. Meaning, it's a very sharp comment. It's presented here as if it's a halachic thing to do. But it's here, I think, in the context of the Agadah. Excuse me. Because it's a judgment, an assessment on how bad it is for somebody who lends with interest, which is in direct defiance of the Torah verse. And therefore, once you're going to come and deny a Torah verse, say the sages, that is tantamount to not accepting God's existence, which is a beautiful equation. And it's, I think, a little foreign to us today, because we accept that there are people who don't all believe in God and who still might value all kinds of elements of the Torah. This view is, if you don't value the elements of the Torah, if you don't keep them, it's the same as not believing in God. And what could be worse than that? It's certainly a statement of their values. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Kol mi sheyesh lo ma'ot malveoto shelo bribi. So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, well, if you have money and you lend the money without interest, about that person, alav hakatuv omer, gaspo lo natan b'neshach, v'shochar al naki lo lakach oseh, eila lo yimot leolam. This person who is not given money with interest, he has not lent it with interest, he has not taken any bribe against the innocent, and this person who doesn't do those things, right, will never collapse. It's a verse from Tehillim. It's not a halakhic statement, but again, it's a value-laden judgment of making sure that you don't lend with interest. How good is such a person? Halamadata. So we understand, therefore, that somebody who lends with interest, his property will collapse. One second, we know all kinds of people who don't lend with interest, and also their property collapses. What's going on here? Amar Belezer, halalu mitmotetin va'olin, halalu mitmotetin va'onin ve'inan olin. Again, there's this categorical assessment that those who lend with interest would just lose out, and those who lend without interest, yeah, their fortunes might go up and down, but so be it. And lastly here, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, Yerdana. Lama tabit bogdim tachrish kavalam asha tzadik mimenu. A verse here from Habakkuk in the Navi in the books of the prophets. It says specifically about the people who are honest, but then they sometimes, you know, lose out. Why do you observe the ways of the treacherous and remain silent when the wicked people swallow the one who is more righteous than him? Tzadik mimenu. Am ravuna tzadik mimenu bolea. Sadiqa more eno bolea. Rav Huna says, somebody who's more righteous, you're talking about gradations, right? He's just going to swallow for the moment. But he cannot swallow somebody who is just an absolute Sadiq. The Sadiq is going to stand up against any nefarious practice against him. Again, it's a very strong statement against taking interest.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this is sort of what we've been waiting for. This whole chapter is all of the, you know, all the reasons why we are not supposed to be taking interest. The sense I get is that there seems to be that this idea of taking interest, you know, it seems to be that it's almost like a fundamental of there's something about it that's just not what a religious person should be doing.
I think that's exactly what we're supposed to think. And then we're stuck with this line at the beginning about how about scholars, Torah scholars, could take interest.
Right. And I think there's also the piece, you know, that we, you know, specifically from non-Jews, there is a piece of it also that's like very specific to like how we treat other Jews as opposed to how we treat other people, which, like, let's be honest, does that make us feel comfortable today? I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Okay, I'm going to move on to another braisa that comes later that has to do with exactly the subject of giving interest-bearing loans with Jews and non-Jews. Tanu Rabbanan, so this is like the bottom of Amud Aleph. Al tikach mito neshach v'tarbit. When the Torah says you should not take from him, meaning your fellow Jew, neshach or tarbit, aval atah naseh lo arev. However, you can be a guarantor for him on an interest-bearing loan, which is a very interesting read. And so the Gemara once it says, Arev Laman, to whom can you act as a guarantor for a Jewish borrower on an interest-bearing loan? Is it to the Jewish lender or to a non-Jewish lender? Ilmale Arev Yisrael, if you'll say that one can act as a guarantor to a lender who is a Jew, Bahatana, didn't we learn in a Mishnah? This is going to be a Mishnah later on in Bava Metzi and a couple of Dapim. Elu Obrim Belo Taseh. These are people who violate a negative commandment when it comes to an interest-bearing loan. Halmalva v'halova harei v'haidim. Right, we saw this before: the lender, the borrower, the guarantor, and the witnesses. Meaning, anyone who's involved with a loan that has interest between two Jews is, you know, involved in that lo taseh. Ela nachri. So the braita must mean you can be a guarantor for a Jewish borrower to a non-Jewish lender. So then the Gemara says, "V'kevan d'dinei d'nachri," since, you know, non-Jewish law dictates the azil balter arva, that the lender goes directly to the guarantor. In other words, rather than the borrower to get the debt, and the guarantor has to pay him the principal and the interest. Ihu nihu dekas shakal mine rabita. Right, when the guarantor basically wants to go to the borrower to get his, you know, to get the money, is it he who's taking interest from him? And shouldn't that be forbidden? So in other words, the lender, according to non-Jewish law, the lender, once they need to get the money, goes to the guarantor, right? If it wasn't paid back, the guarantor then would go to the borrower and say, hey, I had to pay your loan back. I want you to give me my money. But the point is, since that's going to be the guarantor as a Jew to a Jewish borrower, is he going to go to the borrower and say, like, well, I need all the money that I laid out, the loan and the interest? And then aren't you collecting interest in a way? So the Gemara answers, Amar of Sheshet, Shekibel lev ladun bedine Yisrael. So the Brit is referring to a case where the non-Jew took it upon himself to follow Jewish law when it comes to the loan, and he would not go directly to the guarantor. So the Gemara doesn't like this. Ikebel lav ladun bedina Yisrael. If he took it upon himself to be governed by Jewish law, ribit nami lo lishkol, then there wouldn't be any question of interest here. So then Rav Shesha says, I'm a Rav Shesha, shekibela lav lizu. The case is where he took it upon himself to be governed by Jewish law for this, right? That he won't make a claim directly to the guarantor, velo kibela lav lizu, but not about not charging interest. So then the Gemara goes on to the next part of this Mishnah. Malva Yisrael ma'otav shel nachri. Right, a Jew can lend out a Gentile's money, mida anachri, with the Gentile's consent. So the Gemara now is going to quote a brisa that explains this. Tanu Rabbanan, right? Malva Yisrael ma'otav shel nachri mida anachri. A Jew can lend out a non-Jew's money with the non-Jew's consent. Aval lo mida Yisrael, but not with the Jew's consent. Ketzad, how does this work? Yisrael shel avem ma'ot min hanachri kiribi. A Jew borrowed money from a non-Jew on interest, ubokesh lahachzir etam alo, and he wants to return it to him. Mitzao Yisrael acher ve'amar lo. So another Jew meets the first Jew and he says to him, "Tanam li, give it to me, v'ani alalach, and I'll give you, I'll remit you the interest." Kederach shata ma'alelo, right? In the same way that you remit it to him, asur, this is forbidden. V'im hamidu etzol nachri. But if the first borrower presented the second borrower to the non-Jew, meaning to the lender, mutar, then it would actually be permitted, okay? So in other words, if this was all done with everybody's consent, right? So then when the first borrower passes the money on to the second borrower, then he's sort of doing it with the non-Jew knowing. V'chein, right? And similarly, a Gentile who borrowed money from a Jew with interest, and then he wants to return it to the Jew, and another Jew finds this non-Jew and says to him, "Tanam li, give it to me, and then I'll remit it to you, the interest." In the same way that you remit it to him, mutar, this is allowed. But if the first borrower, right, the non-Jew presented the second borrower to the Jew, then it is forbidden. And the reason for that is that then the transfer is done with a Jewish lender knowing, right, with the non-Jewish borrower acting as the Jewish lender's agent, and then this would actually be an interest-bearing loan between a Jewish lender and a Jewish borrower, and that's why it would not be allowed. So the Gemara here says, Bishlama Seifa. Okay, the latter part of the Braisa makes sense. Why you can't have this transfer, right, between the second borrower and the who's Jewish and the non-Jewish first borrower because it's a Jewish lender. L'chumra, right? It's ruling strictly, right? Because we want to make sure that nothing happens with interest. Ela Reisha, but the first part of the Braisa, right? Why is that transfer permitted between the second borrower, who's a Jew, and the lender, who's a non-Jew? Kevan de'en shlichut l'nachri, because there's no concept of shlichus with a non-Jew. Ezu ninu t'kas shakol mine rebita. Borrower is then the one who actually takes the interest from the second borrower. In other words, there's basically no actual, there's no concept of shlichut, so it's actually like that transaction is happening between the two Jews and involves interest. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Huna Bar Manoach, Mashma de Rav Acha, Berei de Rav Ika. So Rav Huna Bar Manoach said in the name of Rav Acha, the son of Rav Ika, Hacha b'mayaskin, and what case are we dealing with here? Kugon de Amar Le, Hanichem al Gabei Karka v'hupater. It's a case in which the non-Jewish lender says to the first borrower, put the money on the ground, and so then you're released of your obligation to me. So in other words, once that happens and then the second borrower takes it, it's as if that first borrower is not involved with it at all. There's no issue of shlichus, and therefore there's no issue of the interest coming from that Jew, right? So if so, if that's the case, then what's the Braisa actually coming to teach us? This case is obvious. So the Gemara says, Elo Amar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says, what's the real case of this Braisa? Kagon shenatal v'natan biyad. So the Braisa is talking about a case where the non-Jewish lender, right, took the money from the first borrower and passed it on to the second borrower with his own hand. So there's no shlichus there. The Gemara still says, okay, why would you have to come teach that? Because we see that there's no borrower there. Mahu detema, it's not obvious because maybe you would have thought to say, Nachri gufei ki avid, that the non-Jew himself, when he acts in this case, adate de Israel kal gemar v'yahed. It's according to the intent of the Jew, the first borrower, that he's resolving to give the money to the second borrower. Ka mashmalan. So the Braisa tells us, no, we just assume that the non-Jew is acting on his own initiative. It's sort of like it takes out the involvement of that first borrower altogether. So I think what we see from this Braisa is that, you know, Anne, when you talked about that you can, you know, charge interest to, you know, a non-Jew, but we're sort of seeing two types of cases here, that I think Jews were charged interest from non-Jews, that that was something that happened. And second, that, you know, there was sort of like commerce that was happening between Jews and non-Jews and money that was fluid. And you sort of had to be careful that if there was interest involved, that sort of didn't get passed on between a Jew to a Jew. But when it involved a non-Jew, then it would be okay.
Oh, that's an interesting conundrum. Like, when do you, how do you set it up so that that will work?
Right. And I think that's what it's, I think that's what it's trying, that's exactly what it's trying to do here.
Nice.
Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rinkus Reviews and all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hundred website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.